Are you sitting comfortably? I felt so anxious as I stroked the ball that my belly had become and felt the growing life within me. I prayed earnestly to God that the baby would be a girl. I wasn't best pleased to be pregnant anyway. I had Aaron and Miriam already, but the thought of having to drown my baby was too much to bear. For much of my life, I've felt like a candle burning between hope and despair, faith and doubt, life and death. Sometimes I'd lie awake at night and listen to the strange noises coming from Amram's stomach as he slept. Amram's my husband. Strange noises from his gut. He was so unhappy and worried for us all. But there was nothing he or any of us could do. We were like sheep without a shepherd. At last, the birthday came. The labour pangs came. The midwives came. The village women came. The men went. And my baby was born. A beautiful, round, squidgy little boy. Skin scrawny and wrinkled. His face so beautiful that the room was filled with light equal to the sun and the moon combined. He opened his deep dark eyes and blinked, and he stared at me, love in a bundle of flesh, not realizing he'd been born to die. My heart was drenched in sorrow as I offered him life-sustaining milk from my breast. What was the point in feeding him if Pharaoh wanted him dead? Let me tell you a bit about Amram. He's my brother's son, which you may think rather odd. But I'm a Bat Levi, a daughter of Levi, born into the tribe of Levi. Yes, one of the 12 tribes of Israel. Descended from Jacob, who is descended from Isaac, who is descended from our father Abraham. Marrying Amram was an easy way to keep the family line pure, which is important to us, and besides, it was my brother's way of making sure I'd be provided for. You may recall that Father Abraham was called out of Ur by God to be made into a great nation, that all peoples on earth would be blessed through him. Us Hebrews are what some people call a peculiar people, called to worship the one Creator God, the good God who is pleased with all that he made. And we are called to be a blessing to the nations. Ha! What a joke. All we get is hassle and hatred. How do you bless people who oppress you? My forefathers came to Egypt because they followed Joseph here. Yes, the Joseph with the coat of the many colours, during great famine and hardship. And whilst he was in power, they settled and were happy, looking after their sheep, their bellies fat and full, telling stories, singing old songs, loving life, times of peace and plenty. But many pharaohs have come and gone over the years, and today nobody remembers Joseph. We are just the underdogs. And I'll tell you why. One, because we're not Egyptian, and two, because there's lots of us. Crazy, eh? Amram does his best to provide for me. He gets up at dusk to join the rest of my people, digging mud for clay in the harsh heat to make bricks for Pharaoh. Others cut crops from the field to bulk up the bricks with straw, and others do the building. We are a huge, cheap workforce, and the Egyptians treat us however they like, which is ruthlessly. The time will come when we Levites have a priestly role in the history of the Israelites. But remember, the Exodus hasn't happened yet, and we have to do physical labour just like everybody else. So Amram comes back at sunset, often with fresh wounds on his back, bloodying his tunic, adding to the long scars from previous beatings. His back is all ridges and lumps. All for a pittance, barely enough wages to keep us alive. The children are always hungry, our clothes are rags, and we are cursed and spat on just for being alive. We didn't think things could get much worse. We thought that Pharaoh couldn't possibly follow up on his decree. But we were wrong. We just couldn't believe it to be true. But we heard on the grapevine that Pharaoh's killing mob had turned up at Rebecca's house and grabbed baby Nathan from where he was sleeping. There was a huge fight, but using brute force, Pharaoh's lackeys took him and chucked him into the Nile like a helpless kitten. And they laughed and cheered while they did it. "Wriggle your way out of that, you little Hebrew rat," one of them had yelled. When we heard about it, we bawled and wailed the whole night through. Once we were emptied of tears, we gathered ourselves, and Amran and I hatched a plan so that the same thing wouldn't happen to our baby. I made a little basket out of papyrus leaves and coated it with tar and pitch. Oh, it smelt so. I needed it to be strong and waterproof like Noah's Ark. I remembered how God had saved Noah's family through the toughest time. Once the basket was ready, we gathered the whole family together to say goodbye to our little boy before going to bed. Early the next morning, whilst it was still dark, I fed him, my gut heavy with grief, and then I lowered my beautiful boy with a face as bright as the sun and moon combined into the little basket. And I prayed it wouldn't be his coffin. I left the house quietly and slowly made my way to the Nile. When I got to the water's edge, I rested the basket along among the bulrushes. It was the worst moment of my life, but it was the best we could do for him at the time. At least if the killing mob called, they wouldn't find him. I returned home empty, stunned by circumstance, and sat on the bed in a stupor. My only hope now was in God. My insides felt cold as concrete. Once you've heard a child cry out to heaven for help and go unanswered, nothing's ever the same again. Nothing. Even God changes. Of course, I should have had more faith. Unbeknown to me, Miriam had followed me down to the river to see what would happen to her baby brother. Just as the sun was coming up, along came Pharaoh's daughter, the princess, in her flowing garments to have her dip in the Nile. Her attendants were chattering and giggling alongside her like fluttering butterflies. As she was about to take off her outer garments, the princess heard my boy crying and saw the little ark and told one of her slaves to pull it out of the water, which she did. All the attendants gathered round. They knew what they were going to see before the princess opened the lid. His bawling was so brash and loud. And sure enough, there he was, my boy, crying for survival. Now, perhaps the princess disagreed with her father's nationalist agenda, or perhaps she couldn't have children of her own, or perhaps she just had a heart of gold, who knows? But my courageous little Miriam approached her with the confidence of childhood and made a bold proposition, one which may have saved her brother's life, to find a Hebrew woman to nurse him. My dear, dear Miriam. The princess assented. Miriam ran home as fast as she could and found me on the bed. "Mum, come, come right now." She shook me hard. "You're getting your baby back. Come with me." So urgent. Confused but hopeful, I ran alongside her as quick as I could to the banks of the Nile, where, incredibly, the princess was soothing my boy in her arms, and she said to me, all bossy-like, "Take this baby and nurse him, and I'll pay you." It still makes me laugh, even today. She paid me, his own mother, to look after my baby. Never have I been more happy. No longer did we have to hide him, no longer did we have to live in fear for his life, and more than that, we were quits in. God had delivered us in more ways than one. You see, this is what the Egyptians could do. One could say die, the other could say live. And we Israelites, we had no choice. And it may seem odd that the princess rescued my boy. She owned property, managed estates, and I gathered from others that she had some political influence too. She was her own woman, not unlike Hatshepsut, who ended up as a pharaoh. Some say it was her who rescued Moses, but that's pure conjecture. But we certainly didn't realise at the time what we now know. The princess's act of kindness would have ramifications for world history forevermore. In that sublime moment when the princess unknowingly gave me back my baby, the fragrance from her makeup wafting in the breeze and her slim arms bathed in golden bracelets which jangled roughly around his ears. Whilst I was happy, elated even, and grateful too, ripples of sadness interrupted the joy as now his future was set and I knew I'd lost him forever to a power way beyond my own. Yes, I had my baby back. As I carried him home, my soul sang an anthem of a thousand flocks of sparrows. His little fingers wrapped themselves round my thumb, and my joy in God's goodness bubbled through me like a freshwater spring. What I hadn't factored in then was that God had a bigger plan, not just for the deliverance of my boy, but for the deliverance of my people, and ultimately all the nations of the world. That was way beyond anything I could grasp. Time passed, the boy grew. I took every opportunity to impress on him his Hebrew roots and shared with him the stories of the God of our forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I told him to never stop worshipping the one Creator God, our God, and I made him promise to pray every day and to remember his family and his people, where he came from. I told him the stories of creation my mother and her mother before her had shared with me when I was growing up, of Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, of Noah's Ark and the flood, and lots more besides. I wanted him to know who he was, that he was loved and chosen, not rejected. The day came when Amran and I had to trust God again for the boy's future. I took him to the palace as agreed to hand him over to the princess. She named him Moses, Moshe, because that sounds like the Hebrew to draw out from the water. I suppose she wanted to honour his roots in some way too. As the princess's son now, my boy had the best education available. He was instructed in geography, history, grammar, writing, literature, philosophy, music, which, as it all turned out, were pretty important for the future he was going to play. I'm so proud of him because many scholars have credited Moses with being the one who penned the first five books of the Bible, the Torah, Pentateuch, although actually it's more likely there were quite a few authors and his books were written over time. Nonetheless, I want you to know my son was an educated man. Sometimes we'd see the royal chariots go by, the guard shouting out, "Bow the knee!" to everyone as it passed. I always craned my neck to see if my boy was riding with the princess before I bent down, wondering if he remembered me. If I saw his face, I would try to seek out his eyes, but he never looked my way. I would be grateful for the dust from the wheels stinging my eyes, because then I could pretend the grit was the reason they were red and smarting. Now and then, we'd also catch sight of the royal party floating down the Nile in a magnificent barge, musical accompaniment mingling with laughter and clinking of glasses, and I would think to myself, my boy is surely on that boat living the high life, worlds away from the little ark which had carried him on the same river years before. I have even heard it said that he led armies against the Ethiopians and came back victorious. But we know very little of that. I felt so mixed up inside. But quietly, we also felt blessed that his life was so much better than ours. Until, that is, we heard he was a murderer. For some reason, my Moses was walking about in the area where we lived. And the story goes there was a fracas in the street. One of the Egyptians was beating up one of our people. And my Moses must have snapped, exploded with fury, because he ended up killing the Egyptian. Oh, Lord, he was in real trouble. I did wonder if, having seen and felt the scars and ridges on his daddy's back when he was a little boy, he'd just snapped. And then, to make matters worse, he saw another fight the next day and nearly did the same thing when two of our people were having a fight. I wondered whether he felt he had the authority to judge now that he was a prince and a grown man of 40, and to lord it over everyone. But I prefer to think he was passionate about right from wrong, that he hated injustice and felt it deep. Pharaoh didn't see it that way, and he was out to kill him again. So much for living the life of royalty in the palace. My boy, the murderer, became a refugee fleeing for his life. We didn't see him or hear of him for decades afterwards. Turns out he fled to Midian, where he witnessed another fracas, the shepherds trying to stop a gaggle of sisters drawing water to feed their sheep. He scared the shepherds off single-handedly and then watered the flock. Clearly, he didn't care much for small-mindedness. The girl's father, Reuel, a.k.a. Jethro, a Midian priest, was so grateful he offered hospitality and a home to my boy, and not only that, but marriage to one of his girls, Zipporah. Perhaps he was glad to have another man around the place, or maybe he wanted to stop all the flirting with his daughters, who knows. Anyway, the point is, once again, my boy was rescued by the kindness of a stranger. He settled in Midian and resigned himself to being a foreigner in a foreign country. He and Zipporah even had a baby boy and named him, foreigner there, Gershom. So I'm a granny. For what good it does me, whoever would have thought it. My story stops here, but let me share with you what I've learnt. When it comes to looking after children, you can't remove every danger, but you can create as much safety as you can. A little basket doesn't seem much, but it did the trick. You can't control every outcome, but you should trust God when times are hard. We felt helpless and hopeless, but it turns out God is faithful, and God uses all sorts of people to come to our aid. You can guide values, but you can't guarantee choices. I impressed on my boy who he was and where he came from, but I couldn't control his choices. You can provide opportunities, but you can't guarantee outcomes. I took my boy to the palace, but he became a murderer. All we can do as parents is influence. We want to be a good influence, but somehow we're a slave to circumstance. I did my best in the circumstances, and that's all I could do. What is amazing, looking back now, is that I can see what happened to Moses prepared him for his future and ours. Spoiler alert! My boy, who was on a death sentence, not once but twice, my boy, who himself became a murderer, led our people out of Egypt, taking us out of slavery to liberty. That's God's way for you. He was the one who rescued my people and led us into the promised land. I'm so in awe of that, because my Moses became a leader, judge, and prophet, the lawgiver, a mega hero. Interesting that the rescued one became the rescuer, isn't it? The one who is delivered became the deliverer. The one who is shown hospitality by foreigners who felt a foreigner became the one to show our people their true identity. My boy, with the face as bright as the sun and moon combined, changed the whole course of world history and paved the way for Jesus, Saviour of the world. I'd like to think I had a little hand in that, but of course it was all God's doing, way beyond my comprehension. I'd like to finish with these words by William Broderick, words which have helped me no end when times have been tough. We have to be candles burning between hope and despair, faith and doubt, life and death, all the opposites. That is the disquieting place where people must always find us. And if our life means anything, if what we are goes beyond the monastery walls and does some good, it is that somehow, by being here at peace, we help the world cope with what it cannot understand.